This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davey, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, filling in for Terry Gross. Our guest actor Don Cheadle is currently starring in the film Hotel Rwanda, which tells the true story of Paul Rusesa Sabagina, a hotel manager who housed over 1,000 Tutsi refugees during the 1994 Rwandan genocide. Potential investors in the film wanted a bigger box office star, like Wesley Snipes or Denzel Washington, for the role, but Cheadle's performance has been widely praised. Stephen Holden of the New York Times calls it a magnificent, understated portrayal of a watchful man who understands the workings of power. Let's listen to a clip from the film. In this scene, he's speaking to other Rwandans at the hotel after learning the UN peacekeeping troops will not intervene to save them.
There will be no rescue, no intervention force. We can only save ourselves. Many of you know influential people abroad. You must call these people.
Please, fax this to us.
You must tell them what will happen to us.
Yes.
Say goodbye. But when you say goodbye, say it as though you are reaching through the phone and holding their hand. Let them know that if they let go of that hand, you will die. We must shame them into sending help. Most importantly, this cannot be a refugee camp. The Interahamwe believe that the Mikulin is a four-star Sabina hotel. That is the only thing that is keeping us alive.
Cheadle has had interesting roles in a series of hit movies. In the film Traffic, he played an agent of the Drug Enforcement Administration. In Boogie Nights, he played a porn actor who loved country music and called himself Buck. In Ocean's 11, he was a pipe bomb specialist. In the HBO movie The Rat Pack, he played Sammy Davis Jr. And in Devil in a Blue Dress, he played Mouse, an ex-con on a short fuse. Terry Gross spoke to John Cheadle last spring. He was starring in the movie The United States of Leland as a teacher in a juvenile hall.
Now, your father worked as a psychologist with children and teenagers. Were you able to draw on his experiences at all?
Not really, because he wouldn't talk about them. I mean, only in very vague general sense did he ever talk about his clients or his, you know, his work. He was very sort of devout about the whole client, you know, doctor privilege, and he never revealed anything that he specifically spoke with about any of his clients. It's more a manner that he has and more just a general way that he discussed problems and tries to get to the root of things that I think, you know, rubs off on me.
You went to the California Institute of the Arts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, it sounds like you had a great drama teacher in high school. Early in your career, you had a regular part on the television series Fame, based on the movie Fame. How did high school for the performing arts and the TV series compare to the drama class life that you were used to in high school?
Well, I wasn't a regular on that show. I did a two-part, you know, one early in the year and one much later in that same season.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I even got attached to Fame was one of my college suite mates, Jesse Borrego, who played Jesse on the show and still one of my great friends today, we all went to this open call where they, you know, they're looking out of 3,000 people, they cast two people, and it was Jesse Borrego and Nia Peoples. And Jesse was, in his inimitable way, didn't leave any contact information. All he had was a snapshot. So they were literally putting his picture on the news saying, "Have you seen this person? If you have seen this person, please tell him to call in because, you know, he has a job." So people were coming up to us at school going, "I just saw your picture on the news." And we're like, "Yeah, right." You know, he didn't believe it. And then finally they tracked him down and took him down there. So that's kind of how I got involved with that, just from, you know, going to the set with him and hanging around and meeting the people that were on the set.
The role that really got you a lot of attention early in your career and won you an award from the Los Angeles Film Critics is your role in Devil in a Blue Dress, which is a film adaptation of a Walter Mosley Private Eye novel, you know, with the main character Easy Rollins, who in the movie was played by Denzel Washington, and you played Easy's old friend Mouse, who's an ex-con and is quite crazy and really kind of gets off on violence.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, let me play a scene from that movie. In this scene, Easy is on the floor with a guy holding a knife to his throat, and the guy's already started cutting. He's already bleeding. Mm-hmm. And then you walk in. This is a surprise. You walk in as Mouse, and you pull out a gun. The guy drops his knife. And then Easy wants to kind of question him and get to the bottom of the story. But no, you shoot him, and he runs away. So let's hear that scene.
Where's Daphne Monet, Frank? All right, look, all right, maybe you don't know where she is, but hey, we can help each other find her, man.
You heard, Doug.
Mouse, no!
College resident.
Nah,
he's busy right now. You're gonna have to call back.
Look, a rich man is willing to pay $1,000 just to talk to this girl. $1,000, that's a hell of a lot of money, man. Frank.
Wait. Look, let me try. Now, look here, Frank. It's Frank, right?
Yeah.
Frank?
What's wrong with you, man? Don't you ever grab me when I got a gun in my hand.
That's Denzel Washington and my guest Don Cheadle in a scene from Devil in a Blue Dress. How did you feel about taking this role, given how skeptical you were of all the kind of crime roles that were available to you at that time? Did this one seem qualitatively different?
Well, it was. I mean, it was a great writing piece and a great director, Carl Franklin, and Denzel, great actor to work with. It was a no-brainer. And he was such... He wasn't just a pat sort of cookie cutter character. That's the other thing about Mouse, is he wasn't these bad television, you know, portrayals of Gangster X. He was sort of a complex and interesting person to me, you know, which is always fun to play. And I don't mind playing a character like that as long as they have shades. You know, so often these roles that I was talking about that we were offered earlier, they were just the guy that was there to hold the gun and, you know, in this scene, scare this white woman, you know, or in this scene, you're being chased by you were more a function than you were a character. And Mouse was very much a character.
How did your portrayal of Mouse change your career and the kind of roles that you were offered?
No, there were some people who wanted me to come, you know, be a psychopath in their movie. And I kind of just rejected those roles because a lot of them were, again, underdeveloped and not as well realized with in the hands of people who weren't as talented as Carl. I just thought this is not going to be anywhere near the same sort of we're not going to get anywhere near the same sort of product, and I don't need to start going down that road, you know, getting typecast as that. So I strayed away from that. Like right after Devil, I think I did Boogie Nights and I did Volcano and I did Rosewood and I remember I did 5 movies that next year, and they were all very different roles and they were all very different characters, which is really exciting, you know, to me. But I think it did sort of put my name out there in a way that hadn't happened before.
Boogie Nights is such a great film. This is Paul Thomas Anderson's film that's set in the pornography trade in, it's the 80s, isn't it? It's the 70s or the 80s? I can't
70s,
remember.
80s, it spans both.
Yeah. And you play you play this character named Buck because you love country music, and sometimes kind of dress in country kind of clothes. And you're mm-hmm. one of the porn actors, but you also sell audio equipment. And I'm going to mm-hmm. play a scene where you're selling audio. You're in the store selling audio to a customer. Here you are.
This is hi-fi. Okay. High fidelity. You know what that means? That means this is the highest quality fidelity. Hi-fi. Those are two very important things to have in the stereo system.
What's the price for the 420?
I have this very unit in my home.
Really?
Yes, I do. But of course, I got it modified with the TK-421, which kicks it up another, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 quads per channel, you know. But that's technical talk. That doesn't really concern you. You're still a little uncertain, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what you need? You need a test drive. That's what you need. You need a test drive. I mean, it's one thing to hear it from Buck's mouth. It's another thing to hear it from the TK-421. So let me just pop in this 8-track, and you just give a listen, tell me what you think, okay?
Woo! Huh. You hear that? You hear the bass, right? You hear it? It kicks. It turns. It curls up your belly. Makes you want to freaky deaky, right?
That's my guest Don Cheadle in a scene from Boogie Nights. That is such a great scene. I love the three or four quads per channel. Like, yeah, what the heck are quads per channel?
That was the most fun, sitting on the set with Paul and going, now what is the exact wrong thing? What's the most perfect, incorrect thing for you to say? And trying to come up, well, should it be, you know, quads per, what is it, channels per? So when we lit up on quads per channel, it was like, yeah, go do that. Go and say that.
There's a great scene toward the end of Boogie Nights in which you're buying donuts. And, you know, you're choosing two of the chocolates and two of the old fashions. And suddenly this guy walks in with a big gun and it's an armed robbery. And another guy shoots him and everybody's dead except for you. Their blood is all over your clothes. But, you know, watching your face in that scene is really interesting because you're just like, oh, boy, the chocolate donuts. And then you're watching in shock and fear as all the stuff happens around you, and you're trying to kind of make yourself invisible, which you can't really do. Can you talk a little bit about shooting that scene?
That was a donut shop, I believe, on Magnolia Boulevard, or one of the big, you know, valley streets, east-west streets. And it was just Paul, another one of these Paul's visions where he just was, how can we put this guy in a situation where he can come up, but he had nothing to do with it? He's the hapless victim of something. But then, you know, because at the end of that scene, obviously he gets that money that was this guy was trying to rob, and he takes it. And it was that whole moral question of should he take the money, should he not? And he does that real long push in to Buck as he's standing there thinking about what to do, mm-hmm. you know, and he's in his sort of moral dilemma about is this right or wrong, and kind of forgets that he's got bodies all around and blood all over him, and goes, hey, I can get my store. And I just think it's great because it's really convoluted and very jangly. Things don't make sense, but it makes perfect sense, which is the kind of what Paul does the best, you know.
Don Cheadle speaking with Terry Gross. He stars in the new film Hotel Rwanda. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview with actor Don Cheadle. His films include Traffic, Ocean's 11, The Rat Pack, Boogie Nights, and Devil in a Blue Dress. He stars in the new film, Hotel Rwanda.
You're, I think, about 5'7". Do I have that right?
5'8".
5'8".
And a half. Thank you very much.
Excuse me. I think you can use your size to different effects. I mean, you're very muscular. And in some roles, like in Boogie Nights, you could have a kind of physically vulnerable look. And then in roles like Traffic or Out of Sight, you can look really strong and able to use that strength. Can you talk about making your body work in both directions?
I think it's something that happens inside, too, that just kind of permeates. I think strong people, when you see someone and you go, that person's strong, very often it doesn't have anything to do with their physicality. You know, it has to do with something that's behind their eyes or something that's inside them that emanates, or some way that they move through a room or move through people. You just go, that guy is not to be messed with, or that guy is very forthright in his, you know, in his direction. There's just something that's very grounded about people like that. And for Buck, I really didn't think about doing anything physically for him. I just really sort of tried to feel kind of wrecked inside, you know, kind of like a house of cards inside that's very, it can be toppled, you know, real easily. And always trying to find, he's trying to always find that, you know, because he was a cowboy, then he had sort of his Earth, Wind, and Fire look, and, you know, and then he trotted out the whole Curtis Mayfield thing, the Sly Stone. I mean, he didn't know what, he had no idea what he wanted or who he was. The only thing he did know was that he wanted to have Buck Super Stereo World, you know, that was very important to him. and that he was an actor. You know, he was a legitimate person. And that kind of thing, I don't know how that comes off physically, but that's what I was trying to work with him on the inside. And, you know, something like a part like Out of Sight or a part like, you know, Traffic, you go, oh, I'm going to be in a short t-shirt and these guys probably do exercise, so I better, you know? It's just, that's just a basic, just go work out.
Don Cheadle is my guest. A few years ago, you were in the HBO Rat Pack movie, playing the role of Sammy Davis Jr. Joe Mantegna was Dean Martin. Ray Liotta was Frank Sinatra. What did you think of Sammy Davis when you were young? Was he on your map at all? I mean,
he wasn't. He wasn't really on my map. The only time that he was on my map is when I would hear my parents and family talking about him, and not necessarily the most glowing of terms about what he represented at that time. You know, that was right around the time when I was growing up that he was with Nixon, and you know, there was that whole thing about him hugging Nixon, and that was a big flap, you know, in the community. And I just never really felt, from even seeing his performances, I thought, this dude is incredible. This dude is unbelievable performer. But as a person, he always seemed kind of slippery to me, you know? That's how I would always think of him, as this guy who's just too slick for school. But undoubtedly, incredibly talented.
Did your opinion of him change when you played him?
I wouldn't say that my opinion of him changed, because it was never really that strongly formed. But I did learn more about him, what made him tick, from his own words, from his own viewpoint, which is also very interesting, you know, to see what he wrote about himself in his two books, you know. Yes, I Can, and I forget the name of his other book. But anyway, both of those books were very interesting. In as much as what he left out, you know, as what he put in, because there were some moments that I thought would have given rise to a lot of discussion about, you know, moments that he had with the Panthers and things that went down with he and Frank, things that you thought, well, obviously you're going to talk about your anger at this situation, or how you, like when he spoke about his anger to Frank, it never had anything to do with any sort of racial anything. It was about Frank's sort of pejorative viewpoint of his lifestyle, which, you know, he completely turned around. They didn't talk for many years together, and then the wives got them together and they sort of patched it up. But he never spoke about things that I thought he has to have some sort of feeling about, you know, what went down with those guys and sort of the situations of being able to perform in places that you couldn't get in and your family had to come in the back door. And I mean, all of those things, I thought that those have to show up someplace emotionally in his book, and he never really dealt with them.
Did you do your own singing for the part?
In a couple of songs, yeah.
And did you try to get his voice?
Yeah, as close as I could. Yeah. On the live, the stage when we were singing the Hey There that we were doing live, mm-hmm, that was live.
Well, why don't we hear that song as performed in the Rat Pack movie? And this is Don Cheadle in the role of Sammy Davis.
Hey there.
You want to laugh? Go sit on the audience. Have a show to do it.
You used to be too wise. Hey there.
What the hell is it, Sam?
Sing us another tune, Sam.
You think someday she'll run to you.
Don Cheadle in Rat Pack, with Cheadle as Sammy Davis, and Joe Mantegna as Dean Martin, Ray Liotta as Frank Sinatra. Was it fun to be part of the Rat Pack, if only in the movies?
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of fun. I mean, whenever you have a fraternity like that, and everybody in the movie was cool to work with, you know. And in the movie, you know, Sammy twirls guns, and obviously he has to tap dance and sing, and plays the drums and, you know, plays the trumpet. It was like, Jesus, I gotta, like, you know, get all of this stuff down to a reasonable facsimile of believability. So every day it was great, because every day it was like I was back in school, because I had, you know, a drum tutorial at 11, and I had a trumpet, you know, session at 1, and then from 3 to 6 I was working with Savion Glover to get the tap dancing numbers down, and the next day I would have to do the gun twirling, and then, you know, so every day it was sort of this intensive Sammy Davis Jr. school. That's when it's really fun being an actor, because you get to sort of touch on all these different aspects of yourself and of other people that you normally wouldn't, you know.
Don Cheadle is starring in the new film Hotel Rwanda. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Fresh Air.